नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणम। वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम। कैंटो 4 टेक्स्ट 29। आई एम सॉरी, चैप्टर 29, चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड टॉक्स बिटवीन नारद एंड किंग प्रचिनाभरी, टेक्स्ट 68। सर्वे क्रमानुरोधेन मनसेन्द्रिया गोचरा आयान्ति बहुशो यान्ति सर्वे समनसो जनः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील ए.सी. भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। द माइंड ऑफ द लिविंग एंटिटी कंटिन्यूज टू एग्जिस्ट इन वेरियस ग्रॉस बॉडीज एंड अकॉर्डिंग टू वन्स डिजायर्स फॉर सेंस ग्रेटिफिकेशन the mind records different thoughts. In the mind, these appear together in different combinations. Therefore, these images sometimes appear as things never seen or never heard. Purport. The activities of the living entity in the body of a dog, may be experienced in the mind of a different body. Therefore, those activities appear never to have been heard or seen. The mind continues, although the body changes. Even in this lifespan, we can sometimes experience dreams of our childhood. Although such incidents now appear strange, it is to be understood that they are recorded in the mind. Because of this, they become visible in dreams. The transmigration of the soul is caused by the subtle body, which is the storehouse of all kinds of material desires. Unless one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, material desires will come and go. That is the nature of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. As long as the mind is not engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the mind will desire so many material enjoyments. Sensual images are recorded in the mind in chronological order and they become manifest one after another. Therefore, the living entity has to accept one body after another. The mind plans material enjoyment and the gross body serves as the instrument to realize such desires and plans. The mind is the platform onto which all desires come and go. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kariya Aikya Arana Kariya Mane Asha. Narottam Das Thakur advises everyone to stick to the principle of carrying out the orders of the spiritual master. One should not desire anything else. If the regulative principles ordered by the spiritual master are followed rigidly, the mind will gradually be trained to desire nothing but the service of Krishna. Such training is the perfection of life. Translation. In continuation of the talks between Narad Muni and King Prachinavari, the detailed explanation about the mind and the complexities of how the mind really could take us away from our path or could be our best friend is explained in great detail. So we should really first understand that the living entity actually has two kinds of bodies. We hear the mention of the gross body. So one may say, if there's only one body, we would only talk of body. But when you talk of gross body, then the other body is actually the subtle body. And the actually the living entity is in the subtle body. The subtle body is mind, intelligence and ego. And well, the gross body is only the instrumental outer covering. So actually when we all see, then when there is death, when somebody dies, the gross body is finished. In fact, it never had any life without the presence of the soul, the living entity, which is in fact in the subtle body. So we can actually see that the gross body apparently is finished, and in that particular lifetime, the subtle body continues. So there is a continuation in which the mind, intelligence and ego actually take, and in fact that is the activities which are pious or impious on the level of the which are in the subtle body really gets carried to the next gross body, and depending on the consequences of the kind of life we lead, we would get that kind of a gross body. So and when we refer to sometimes when we say that there is a ghost, that's only when the subtle body acts without the instrument of the gross body. So it may happen occasionally that the gross body may not have the gross body may not have appeared temporarily. So there's nothing else but just the subtle body groping for waiting for a gross body. We can also see that sometimes I mean, we do know actually that the gross body may be resting, may be sleeping in the night, and actually it is the living entity in the subtle body actually leaves the gross body and goes into a dream, and then comes back and returns to it. So, but then the next day we completely forget, where there is no remembrance of the dream. So in the same way, the gross body, actually when the subtle body, when it leaves the gross body and goes into another gross body, then that the previous, there is no remembrance of the which gross body we were in, and then now we go into a new so-called new life. But the karmic reactions of course would continue. So therefore, when you talk of liberation, it means getting avoiding the clutches of the subtle body. And the only way we can do this is by purifying the senses, because these are the ones which actually run wild and which allow the mind to go from the mind's dictates will then let the senses try to gain pleasure away from the chosen path. And therefore, if we train the mind to concentrate on Krishna conscious activities, then slowly the purification of the senses will take place. And when that takes place, then all the senses are trained to actually please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in which case then the material contamination is completely removed. And then we would actually go back to the Lord, who is in fact in Satchidananda form. And we, though we are part and parcel of the Lord, because we chose to come and get materially contaminated, therefore we are, we have this temporary gross body. So this is the path how we could go back to our original spiritual form. And a perfect example given to us is of Amrish Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam, who perfected his life by, in spite of being the emperor of the entire world, how he used every sense, all his senses were completely focused, entirely dovetailed into the service of the Lord. So we are also encouraged that the example given is because how we can train our ears to hear about the glories of the Lord or about any Krishna conscious activities, that we see the beautiful sight of the deities and all other activities or sights which are connected to the consciousness of the Lord, which gives us the consciousness of the Lord, that we speak also either the glories of the Lord, we eat prasadam, which is offered to the Lord. So in this way, all the senses can be connected, and by this connection, gradually the purification process starts. So it's a process which is based on enthusiasm and patience both. And thus at the time of death, the mind, intelligence and senses, ego, are purified. And then we can go back to the Lord. And in fact, Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, in 9.34, Man manabha mat bhakto, madhyati mam namaskuru. Please think of me, worship me, this way you will come back to me. So, he has clearly told us the process also. But because the mental, means the mind, the thoughts are essentially the reactions of, the thoughts actually create the activities. So the activities are really the reactions of how we think. Therefore we have to suffer the consequences of our various activities. And that's why all the time the concentration, or we constantly hear why the mind is really the problem, or the could be a, the problem, why it is so difficult to control. Because the all our actions, whatever we do, are essentially based on the consequences of our thoughts, and the thoughts will guide our activities. Just like it is mentioned here in the purport, that that the nature of the mind is thinking, feeling and willing. And willing is really through willing the activities, that is when the mind wills, then actually the actions are manifested. See, it is when you are just thinking, it is only still in the actions are not yet manifested. But when we, one of the natures of the mind is to will, and willing means that you will actually act upon the thoughts, and then the activities start. So, and then it is too late to control it. Now the mind, as is mentioned also in the purport, that is the storehouse of various thoughts and experiences undergone during our past lives. So we may not realize it, but there are it is the repository of all the various many millions of or billions of thoughts and experiences that have accumulated over so many lifetimes. And we can see the see the symptoms of that, the truth in it, because sometimes we go to a place or we experience something which we go to a place we've never been before, and we feel that we have been here before, or we experience something for the first time, but yet we feel the sense of what is known as déjà vu. It's a French word which says which means already seen, literally means, but it really says that you get a sense of a past connection. Well, in fact, there is no proof of it technically. We've never been to this place, or we've never had this particular experience before, but we get a strong sense that we've been before. So we can see that there is a continuation of the past to the present and the present to the future because of the activities of the mind, intelligence and the ego, and the subtle body is really the link. Now, in this connection, there is also the story of Jad Bharat, which we if we discuss it for a few moments, how Jad Bharat, as we know, was Manas Bharat who, when because of his deep affection and getting engrossed, entangled in the life of a deer, when he subsequently, in spite of his great activities, had to undergo, take a life of a deer. And then when he appeared as Jad Bharat, he chose to not to get entangled by any reactions, and therefore he completely controlled all his talk and kept to himself, never spoke a single word at all. But when he was at one time, and he was fully grown and he was carrying the palanquin of the king, you know, you can imagine if there are four people carrying it and one person is, because of his deep understanding, he was in fact so compassionate and sensitive even to the ants. So every insect or ant that he would see, he would actually stop and try to bypass it. So if four people are carrying it, one person acts in this way, obviously the other three are going to be unsettled and the person inside the palanquin is not going to have an ideal ride. So the king, of course, was extremely angry. He was furious because he never explained why he was doing this. And he kept doing this all the time. Nobody could understand why he was doing it. So the implication was that he was deliberately doing it to harass the king, which was actually not the case. But nevertheless, finally, the king was so furious and then he really blasted, really chastised the Jad Bharat and spoke many harsh words. And then that was really the start of a very wonderful deep realizations of Jad Bharat, which he then speaks to the king. And he tells the king that you should be careful about what you speak, because in this life you are the king and I am the servant. Next life you may be the servant, I may be the king. And you know, then he explains to him the entire science of Krishna consciousness about the life of the soul and the transmigration of the soul and how the activities are based on the how uncontrolled mind, and that can take one hither and thither. And that but then at the end of it he explains that that what we are really is because of this mind. And therefore we, if we really concentrate, if there's one thing that we can do in this world, if we can control this mind, then really we have the best chance of connecting to our original reason for being in this world. Because that's the one thing which completely obscures and blocks the reality. Why we may say, why can't we? The scriptures tell us that Krishna is in our heart. He is the friend of every living entity. He is like there are two birds who are sitting there. One is Krishna is observing everything, seeing everything. But we say, why can't we love him? We can't feel, we can't see him, we don't know him. It's because the mind really ultimately is. His activities are obscuring our vision. So the clearance of the this obstruction, or the clearance of this of the mind's activities, would be the key to. It's always really needed in one way, for us to have a clear vision. So all our activities, the austerities that we may perform, the chanting of the holy name, the cleansing process we talk about, everything is finally to see that our mind really comes back to its original position. So it is, and therefore, and that requires obedience, it requires a sense of discipline, a strong discipline, where because of the contamination over so many lifetimes, that doesn't just happen overnight. You may understand mentally. We do understand mentally often, but then to implement it, it doesn't come immediately. And sometimes we start, and then again we slip, again we start. But then we must know that because of the nature of the process, and that we have to counter it over so many, it is not going to be easy. But to the extent that we sincerely turn to Krishna, to that extent Krishna will reciprocate. He is always waiting to help us. So, if we really turn to Him in a helpless state, then He is always willing to help. Arjun says in the Bhagavad Gita that, Krishna, you are telling me to control the mind, but it is easier to control the raging wind than to control the mind. Actually, even Arjun may talk of may being easier to control the raging wind, but if you say we have tornadoes or hurricanes, cyclones, you know, by different names, we have seen that all we can do is just hide. Even today, with all the technological advance, nobody can do anything. They just have to find a place to hide and minimize the damage. We can say, now we can say that instead of 10,000 people dying, maybe 5,000 may die or 1,000 may die, or instead of a million houses, maybe 100,000 houses may be destroyed. But the point is that there's nothing we can do. And here Arjuna is saying that he finds it easier to control that raging wind, but can't control the mind. So we may feel helpless and absolutely heartbroken that if Arjuna is saying this, then there is no point in attempting it. But the apparent paradox is that Krishna himself says that you turn to me. He says you worship me, you turn to me, pay homage unto me, and I will take you back to Godhead. That's all. So that's why Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and it's complicated for the complicated. So if we simply take what is actually given to us and follow it sincerely. Sincerely means to the fullest ability and in a most transparent way, then the reciprocation of Krishna is guaranteed. Otherwise, all the activities that we do on the basis of the mind's tricks, we will get incriminated. And then the bondage is there. So, therefore, all the scriptures constantly tell us all the time that don't trust your mind. Don't trust your mind. Never trust your mind. Don't act on the basis of the mind. But that is our difficulty, because everything we see around us is really on the basis. In fact, the glorification of people around us in this world is based on the basis of the mind. We see somebody who's we certify him, or we give him a Nobel Prize, or we give him a greatest recognition, prestige. Somebody has a very sharp mind and he actually can manipulate material energy on that basis, and then that's how the world works, and we get so caught up in it, we don't put any value to, he may be an atheist, he may be having three mistresses or whatever his life is, but he may still get a Bharat Ratna or the highest accolade. You see, so it's entirely on the basis of how a person's mind works. And the arrogance is such that we do not even recognize who gives us that the source of the mind, intelligence and ego. If we recognize that, immediately, if we have an appreciative spirit of the Lord, if we have the slightest gratitude, then automatically we will be humbled, because we would know the extent of which how Krishna's the powers have worked, and to the extent that we appreciate it, to that extent we will see our infinitesimal position and seeing Him in that infinite position. But because of that complete the obscurement, and because we get the pride of acting on the basis of the mind and actually controlling things, to that extent we are completely trapped by Maya. There are some wonderful examples given in the Bhagavatam One example is of a hunter, that when a hunter catches an animal, it is so obvious that he has to catch on to it, he has to cage it, put it in a close position. What happens if he just releases the animal? The minute he lets go, the animal is going to escape, and the animal is going to sometimes even attack. So the analogy is given of that the mind is like the animal. So once we have to cage it, we cannot let go. You know, we have to keep it under bound. So it is an ongoing process. That entrapment has to be, it's not that you've done it once and then we let go. It has to be on a continuous basis. It comes out of constant practice. Another example Sukhdev Maharaj gives in the Bhagavatam, he compares the mind, he says the mind is like a prostitute. You know, a prostitute is a woman who would have many lovers, many paramours. So similarly, the mind, actually, who are the paramours here? The paramours are lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, pride. And here the mind actually is freely roaming around and getting completely entangled and engrossed with all these six anarthas, and therefore we are completely ultimately they will kill our inclination for spirituality. And another wonderful example in the Bhagavatam to describe the position of the mind and how to control it is compared with a lantern, you know, a lamp. You know, in the lamp, you see the what actually gives us the light is the wick. And if the wick is properly controlled, then it is in connection with the ghee, and it gives us the right flame. If it is slightly out of control, then it could completely blacken the entire lantern, and we can't even see inside the lamp. The purpose of giving us a light is totally defeated. So similarly, we have to control our mind such that we can actually see with clarity the reality that is around us. That Krishna is the controller, we are controlled, we are meant to be his enjoyment, we are not the enjoyer. And in that process we actually can enjoy. So, if we properly control it, then we can really be in touch with Harinam, Harikatha, Hari Seva, all the instruments that are given to us in the process of going back to Godhead. And we talked of constant practice, that we need to be regularly in touch. It's not a once lifetime process. This constant practice comes only by constantly being in the right association and absorbing it. We could be anywhere. We could be physically here and we may be mentally somewhere else. So it is really dovetailing our thoughts and actually focusing on that is what sincerity means, that we actually what we speak, we do, and we act is all in the same way, that we make the fullest attempt. And really it is a struggle that actually Krishna sees. He doesn't see the result. Sometimes we may be put in a most difficult position. So we may describe such and such position, say, okay, so how can this person do? But anyone can make an attempt. Ultimately, if the realization is there, the understanding is there, then from whatever hopeless position, if we make an attempt, then he sees only the struggle. Ultimately the result is in his hands. Actually, Krishna, we can see that Krishna is the controller of everything, which means he is the controller of the mind, obviously. So it is very easy for him to tell the mind that, just let go. But he actually tells the mind that, you know, such and such a person is my devotee, but I want you to go and harass him. I want you to go and put some obstacles, and he directs it. So he was, I want him to turn to my holy name. I want him to take the, to struggle. He's really struggling. And when he does that, I will then take him. Because that is the proof of our love and appreciation for Krishna and our willingness to surrender. So if you see the everything coming from Krishna means the origin of even the problems, even the vagaries of the mind that he plays tricks, then we know that he is also the provider of the solution. He sets the questions, he gives the solution, but how, when, why we had, it's not in our understanding, except that we just follow the process. And of course, ultimately, the real process is to seek a spiritual master. Because we cannot do it on our own. We, on our, with our own efforts, it would be very difficult. And it would not be consistent. We may make a lot of progress and then within a moment we could completely lose everything. After all, we've talked of millions of lifetimes of contamination. So therefore, it's not that in the past we've not made efforts. We may have made and failed. The sure process, Krishna himself has given it and underwritten it, is by accepting a spiritual master. Himself also, he accepted Sandipani Muni as his guru, gave us a personal example of how he served his Guru Maharaj, and in such a way that Sandipani Muni was completely, fully satisfied with his attempt to serve him. In every lifetime we've seen Lord Ram, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all accepted a spiritual master. And therefore our effort has to be to really satisfy the spiritual master in all its form. And really speaking, Jiva Goswami in fact says that the spiritual master is the Atma of the disciple. Because the really speaking, you know, the Atma is the symptom of survival, of that the body is alive. So actually we are in a dream. We are in a complete bewilderment. We are in total darkness till the spiritual master comes in touch with us, or we come in touch with the spiritual master. And he awakens our Krishna consciousness if we allow him to. And that awakening process really is akin to he really being compared to that. So that is the kind of importance that is given. I mean, in a literal sense, when we say if we say this is the Atma, then we want to preserve it and we want to be alive, then really in spiritual life the being alive means that we have to put the spiritual master at that level, that our only survival is to be to hear his to be at his lotus feet, to be completely surrendered to him. Rupa Goswami has said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there are four prerequisites for any serious would-be disciple. One is that first we have to accept bona fide spiritual master. Second, we have to become initiated by the spiritual master and learn how to serve, to provide devotional service. Third, to obey his orders with faith and devotion. And fourth, with his guidance, we follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas to try to lead our lives accordingly. So we have so many constant reminders, and we have been very categorically told that repeatedly, in all scriptures in fact, the need of a spiritual master. The word master means someone who knows everything and is in touch with is in parampara, is in touch with Krishna, and who means, and the opposite of the master means is the servant. So it would be that if in the manner in which we take up our service, that is really what is most pleasing to the spiritual master. So to please the spiritual master should become our goal. But one would say, how do we please the spiritual master? The spiritual mind, because, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was here, there was, in 1975, there was a big debate in ISKCON, and some temples there were, it became to such a level that it came to the notice of Srila Prabhupada that they were saying that this service is better and that service is better, and Sankirtan is the best, and deity worship is only for neophytes. And Prabhupada actually wrote a letter saying that that is childishness, this kind of thinking, because at in spiritual zone, all services are equal. See, it is not the type of service, but it is the mentality and the condition in which, in the mood in which we serve is most important. So if you are in a completely surrendered mood, totally seeking shelter of the spiritual master, and our only intention is to please him, not to indirectly also get our happiness in that, this is very important. That's where the mind plays tricks. But complete surrender means we are only seeking the happiness of the spiritual master in every respect. If he says we have to follow the regulative principles, we are doing that. If he says we are chanting, we are doing that. And the specific services, we do it. And we also seek to know whether he is pleased with it. That are we doing it in the right way. Then only we can have any hope for ourselves. Yeah, lastly, in respect to the pleasing spiritual master, we may say, what is the evidence that we are pleasing a spiritual master? I mean, how do we know? Is he happy or not? So, Satsvarup Maharaj has given some very good signposts. He says, one is that we, if we are sincerely following the spiritual master, if we are sincerely, if our own spiritual master is telling us what we should be doing, and he is pleasing, his goal is to please Prabhupada, so we will be, if we do that, we are pleasing Prabhupada. Second is, other devotees are also happy. Apart from spiritual master, there are other Vaishnavas, and our activities are all in conformity. And if we, if we see, the signals are that others, devotees are happy, we are also pleasing our spiritual master, pleasing and pleasing Srila Prabhupada. But the most definite form is that the nature is that means we will ourselves be very satisfied. We ourselves will find the satisfaction and the pleasure and the taste, and that nobody has to tell us when we actually are contented. Yayatma suprasiddhati, that is the nature of our soul, that we would be completely fulfilled and very happy. So if we are on that process and we find, then that is an evidence that Srila Prabhupada is happy, acharyas are happy, spiritual master is happy. That is not the goal. I mean, that is the goal, but that is not the end. In the sense that we shouldn't, as we said earlier, it is a lifetime process. And we have to continue in that. So it gives us encouragement, but it isn't to slacken or to let go. In fact, it is to intensify. Because as we are happy, then our focus is also more and more on that process. So we'll end here. If there's any questions, any comments? Actually, I intended to tell the story of the Avanti Brahman, but I think that would become too long, so I skipped it. That would be the most obvious and wonderful example. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for a realization-packed class, Guruji. There was one doubt in my mind, which came up when you explained about the spiritual masters serving the spiritual master. Because at one point in your class you explained that there is a tendency in the disciple to squeeze out some pleasure even while performing bona fide service. That is still my own idea. And then you ended up saying that, quoting from Satsarup Maharaj, that we can definitely be sure that we are pleasing the spiritual master when we are pleased. So in our conditioned stage, gross pleasure and subtle pleasure is what we know, enjoying the senses or the mind. So what is the real benchmark to understand that the spiritual master is pleased with our service? Is it our own pleasure or which we are seeking?
Actually, the whatever service we do has to be authorized. And by, when you say authorized, it means it has to be certified by others, a spiritual master. So any service we do, it has to be an authorized service. So therefore, we just can't concoct, otherwise we could end up doing something on our own. So if we are following every step, we are always taking the guidance and checking, either with the spiritual master or with the authority that he has put in his place, then we would be quite safe. We should just completely follow that. In fact, more than any other religious tradition, the Vaishnava tradition stresses this, following the spiritual master. More than any other tradition, that Krishna himself says that to Arjuna, that anyone who wants to be my disciple, my devotee, is not actually my devotee, but someone who wants to be the devotee of my devotee, of my servant, a servant of my devotee, then he is near to me. So, answer to your question, I think if we know it is authorized and if we keep checking, then we are quite safe. Any other questions? There's one. Switch it on.
Gross body and subtle body. Now, between the subtle body and the soul, what is the difference?
Actually, the soul is in the subtle body. So, the subtle body is really our mind, intelligence and ego. So, actually the activities of, means the soul, to the extent it is guided by the mind, and you see if the mind is identifying with the bodily aspects of material world, when we say materially contaminated, we mean that we are completely ignoring the reality and only going by our gross senses and seeking pleasure that way. So when, to the extent we do that, and because the soul identifies with the material body, therefore it is suffering. So otherwise, the soul is, it is stated that actually there is no suffering. And in the story of the Avanti Brahman, where this person who suffers a lot, and then he comes to the understanding and the realization, and the way he is harassed afterwards, by everybody, he's completely calm because he knows, he says in that song, that actually it is only the mind. Nobody is my friend, nobody is my enemy, nobody else is responsible, neither time nor pious activities. Basically, it is only my mind, which is, because the mind is leading us to act in certain ways, and according to those actions, then we identify with it. Now, if it is identifying and we are getting contaminated because we are getting engrossed in material senses, that means if we become so passionate about our only about our work and our material responsibilities and money and so on, so and our sex life and our other things, then we are going to go up and down and suffer accordingly, because these are all temporary. But to the extent that the mind is controlled and actually comes in contact with the realization that it is on a that our true nature is that we are also Satchidanand, then in fact the soul is getting its natural pleasure, because in fact that is the real nature of the soul, to serve the Lord. So that obscurement we talk of, that covering, It's really the covering of the soul, which is covered by the activities of the mind. Any other comments? Granthar Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.